B-Pod Studios.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes, twisting your mind with Pat Celtics in base. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town fame. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. So this was just posted by Karen Grigian of the Boston Herald. So one of the other things that's been a narrative heading into tomorrow's game for the Patriots at home against the Cleveland Browns, 4:25 kickoff in a monsoon. So if you don't head down, or maybe you're selling your tickets because you don't want to get soaked all day, of course, catch it here on 98.5, the Sports Hub. Bob Sosie, Scott Zolak will have the call. Beadle and Gasper in the pregame. Beadle and I in the postgame. But one of the narratives here is that, with a win tomorrow, Bill Belichick will get 300 wins, including his postseason wins. So Karen goes through the top 10 most important regular season wins in Bill Belichick's head coaching career. And wouldn't you know it's at number one? If you had to guess, what do you think it is, Chris? Regular season.
Regular win. Season. Top 10 most important? I'm not good at this stuff.
It'd be near and dear to your heart.
Oh, 16-0.
Puke. Ugh. Week 17.
Nice choice, Karen.
Week 17, 2007 season versus New York Giants. Patriots win 38.
Saturday night.
Yep, 38-35. Only one team has ever gone 16-0 during the regular season, and Belichick's team
put it in my veins.
While the Patriots didn't get to 19-0, yeah, way to bury the lead. Falling just short by losing in the Super Bowl to the New York Giants, they did accomplish something special. Puke.
Yes.
With a perfect regular season.
Yes.
Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, they threw the kitchen sink at the Giants, so the Giants knew what the game plan would be when they had to face them like a month later. God, oh, I hate this so much. No. No, 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 no. No, the most important one is one she actually has at 5.
Okay.
And I don't want to get into, like, Mount Rushmore talk, but God, I hate that 16-0 thing so much. I really do, and I know
tremendous.
You love it. You still want that banner up, and credit to Beadle, who got in the ear of Jonathan Kraft and said, you know how, like, embarrassing that is? Take it down. And they finally did take
that's
the damn
not,
thing
they
down.
They didn't take it down because of Beadle, please.
I think Beadle's got some juice.
He definitely has juice, but that's not why. They took it down because they were not taking that down until they won another Super Bowl. And then they did, and then they took it down.
Well, week 3.
How convenient.
Yeah, because you want it up in your house.
I do. I will take that. There's no way that thing should be in storage. It should be at the Pro Football Hall of Fame or in my house.
Testament to failure. Week 13-03 season against Indianapolis.
Top of the table.
Patriots win 38-34. William McGinnis stop of Edger and James on 4th and goal, giving the Patriots home field advantage throughout the 03 AFC playoffs. That, to me, to this day, is the most important regular season win in the history of Bill Belichick. That's 16-0.
So I'll just say, I don't want to go down this rabbit hole, and I've realized that I can't win. But I think there's a rejoin we play here where it says, where it's my voice saying, I am more capable of emotionally divorcing myself from my fandom. If you take the emotion out of it, which I recognize now that people around here are not capable of doing, but the sports terminator that I am, if you just look at it objectively, what they accomplished, the fact that no other team has done that in the history of the NFL and going on more than 40 years of a 16-game schedule, like what they did last year when they got hot at the end and won the Super Bowl, like the Ravens did that, the Packers did, like some team does that every year. It happens almost every year.
Yeah, someone's going to win the championship, and I want it to be the Patriots again. The championship is more important to me than this regular season nonsense and the unbeaten season.
Oh, that's fine.
And
it can be more important.
This brings me to my bigger point of why, okay, I wanted to touch on this article.
Right.
We are now talking, this one, it's starting to get to me. Because it wasn't, but now it is. Just in the last week or so, because Maz has written a column on it on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Those two, Felger and Maz, talk about it like they're so nonchalantly. Like, we are now just... We are just talking about, like, oh, yeah, no, 19-0 is on the table. Like, oh, I don't know. It's just it's a formality. The Patriots are going to be unbeaten this year. Who's going to really challenge them? Look at how easy the schedule has been. Mm-hmm. Even the teams we thought were going to be good, like Dallas, Baltimore, could be a threat, yeah, in the AFC. But still, look at their schedule. Who are they really going to lose to? They're going to be favored in every single game. Yeah, 19-0 is on the table. 19-0. Drop a game. Drop a game. I'll be begging for them to drop a game between now and the end of the regular season. It's like you people have short memories. You forget when they're struggling against the Eagles and A.J. Feely at home, when they're struggling against Kyle Bowler, right, in that game in Baltimore where they're having to get a gift from the refs to actually win that game towards the end of the year. They're struggling against straight-up bums, and you can see them running out of gas. Ah, but it's different. The defense is on all-time defense this year, Murray. Ah, you're just a big – you're a worry wart. You're a big Jim worry. No, I'm not living through that again, and you don't want to either. Trust me. You know I'm right. You don't want the 19-0 what? So you can buy more merch? So you can buy the stupid hat and the T-shirt? You don't want it. You want a championship.
It's not merch.
You want a championship. That's what you want.
It's merch. It's because it's the ultimate. You look, they have six rings, right? They have six rings right now. That's one for every, you know, digit.
Yeah.
Right? Plus one. But you do the 19-0, that's the middle digit to everybody. There's nothing you can say if they do. I want them to do it. Now, do I think they're going to? So here's my thing. It's not about that amazing 2007 season, which is grossly underappreciated because of a crazy fluke play and a ridiculous non-holding call that should have been called. Jarvis Green clearly drew a holding there that they didn't. I mean, that play lasted for 45 seconds back there before Tyree even pinned the ball to his helmet. But that's for another day. But the reason I'm now sort of chase when it comes to this thing was 2015. Because 2015, I was like, okay, I've seen this movie before. They're going to do it. They got off to the 10-0 start, and then there were some injuries. There was some other stuff. They did run out of gas, as you said, and then they don't even end up making the Super Bowl. So I just think it's really difficult to do, and it takes a really special team to do it, and there was a really special team in 07 that did it. And so that's why they need to get a lot, you know, more down the road for me before I can start seriously entertaining that thought.
And 15 was, that one felt like a real missed opportunity that was self-inflicted. Now, granted, you mentioned injuries because the Edelman injury that happened,
that really started
to hurt them. But the way that they just threw away, or Belichick handled those last couple of games against the Jets and Miami, you know, deferring in overtime, they lose on the kick. Yeah. That seals it. And then the way that they handled the game in Miami, it's like,
Jackson hour?
Yeah, we'll be fine as the two seed. We don't have to worry about it. Well, no, you had to go to Denver, and ultimately that's what caught up to you. Because I think if Denver has to come here, well, we're talking about, you know,
I agree.
Was it four straight Super Bowls now? Whatever it is, I've lost count. It's ridiculous. But that one they left on the table.
No, I agree. But that was a team that looked like a wagon. It looked like pretty unstoppable. And again, 10-0 star, you think they're going to do it. And, you know, obviously, like I said, you end up losing in the AFC Championship game. I believe that was also the mortar kick year. Am I correct?
Yes.
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so there's just weird things can happen. So you talk about, you know, that's a year where they lost to some bum teams down the stretch. The one thing I will take away from 07 and apply to this team is what's happening defensively right now is incredible, but I don't think it's sustainable. The same way that what happened in the first 10 games of 07 offensively was ultimately not sustainable.
What have you made of the conference? Who's the two? Oh, and the other thing, too. So thankfully, they're holding them out. But like how they're handling Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City. Like, I hate this. I think that they have to think longer term here. I think the league might have to intervene and say, like, listen, you have your franchise quarterback here for the next decade. He's also the face of the league. Like, no, let's not rush him back. He was practicing this week after dislocating his knee against Denver a couple of Thursdays ago. Like, that's just stupid.
Well, they probably feel like they can't fall too far behind the Patriots. And maybe they feel like if they come into Gillette, they can't win that game. It's for them, it's probably, I mean, you know, I know we talk playoffs around here, but like, you know, regular season does matter sometimes. And for Kansas City, they might feel like we dropped that game to Indy. Like, we can't get too far behind the Patriots. We need to have some chance here. Because, look, that game's in December. I think Mahomes will be healthy by then when they roll into Gillette. They probably want to feel like, well, if we win that one, we can get home field.
But who do you think is the two in the conference right now? Or who's a legitimate threat, I guess?
I mean, the way I was thinking about this last night, it's funny that you asked this question. I mean, I still think Kansas City's the two, even though that defense still stinks. I think Baltimore's for real because I think their secondary is pretty good, and I like that addition of Marcus Peters. And then Indy. And the reason I'll say Indy is I think their defense is good. They have a coach in Frank Reich who, you know, helped beat the Patriots in that god-awful Super Bowl in Minnesota that I never want to talk about again. And they have... I just think that offensive line, I could foresee
the best in the league.
I could foresee some sort of game plan where they just sort of play keep away like they did to the Chiefs and then rely on their defense and steal one against the Patriots.
Yeah, my top five has been very fluid. in the NFL. I get mocked relentlessly by Felger and Maz for that, and I have no shame in that. That's just the way I am. I'm up and down. I go with what my eyes tell me. Baltimore, though, I think that to me was maybe the most eye-opening win of the year in the league, that they went into Seattle and that Russell Wilson had been playing, I think, as best. He was the clear-cut up until last week favorite for the MVP in the league through the first 6 weeks. Lamar Jackson, straight up took over that game in the second half. Now, is the way he plays and relies on his legs, is that sustainable come playoff time? Probably not. But their defense is improved with Marcus Peters there. And that was a ballsy-ass win for them to go into Seattle and win that game. So I have them as the two right now. And Kansas City, I'm with you. That defense has actually gotten worse. They go from Bob Sutton to
Steve Spagnuolo.
They make some additions up front. They bring in Tyrann Mathieu. They still stink. You can run it right down their throat.
Yeah, I know. It's bad. And they're really banged up there, too. Chris Jones is banged up. They're banged up this week. There's no question about that. So we'll see. I'm dug in now. I'm just, stubbornly dug in on the Cowboys and the NFC. I know, objectively, they're not the best team. But I think they have potentially the highest ceiling. And because I picked them before the year and they got off to such a good start, this is one where I cannot emotionally divorce myself. I'm invested in this prediction at this point. So I'm ride or die with Dak.
I understand being take committed. I've been there before, Chris, and stubbornly you ride or die with a dumb take. It happens. The other one too. Shame on me for believing in Houston after they went into Kansas City and shocked the world there. What a great comeback win. I rarely, if ever, bet on sports, but I knew going into Sunday, I was like, you know what? This is going to be a Bill O'Brien special. I should have bet on Indy because I knew that was such a Bill O'Brien thing to go into Indianapolis after a massive win in Kansas City for them to have a penalty-filled dud against that Colts team. Shame on me. But
it's
the Colts weird. The Colts might have something too, though. I think you're right there.
They do. I mean, they're good. They're a good team. But I look at Houston, and sometimes I look at Houston and how talented they are, and I'm like, oh my God, imagine if you gave Bill Belichick that team.
Right.
It's kind of the same theory for me with the Cowboys, too, how much talent they have. And the one thing I'll say again about the Cowboys is I know they lost to the Jets, horrendous, but look how different that team looked once they got Collins and Smith back at the tackles. It was completely different. And I sort of feel the same way about Indy. If those offensive lines stay healthy, those are legitimate teams because those offensive lines make the quarterback better, and they make the whole team better.
Hey, Red Sox fans, there's a new nerd in the neighborhood. They found a replacement for Dave Dombrowski. We'll tell you about Chaim Bloom next here on Gasper and Murray.
Stay tuned for more Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Last year, Bloom finished second to Brody with the Mets. He's the young guy with the Rays who their owner has told her and told you on this show with me and has told me privately that the kid's a genius, that he's a baseball genius, the smartest kid he's ever been around. The Red Sox just hired him to run their baseball operations. Good for them. Not a bad move. I mean, Sternberg told me this kid's the best. Absolutely the best. He finished second to Brody for the Mets. The Mets almost hired him. And now he goes to the Red Sox to run their whole place.
All right, Red Sox fans, who's a new nerd in the neighborhood, Chaim Bloom. 3 years as the assistant GM, last 3 years as assistant GM with the Tampa Bay Rays. He's the replacement for Dave Dombrowski, has a new title. He's not the GM. He's not the head of baseball ops. He's the, what is it, the president of baseball operations?
Nope.
No.
Chief Baseball Officer.
Thank you. Chief Baseball Officer. Yep. That's what I meant. I wasn't president of baseball ops, dummy. Baseball officer.
You are chief radio officer today on the show.
Yeah,
congratulations.
And that, of course, was WFAN's Mike Frances of the Sports Pope talking up Chaim Bloom, who he had been told is a genius. He was going to get the Mets GM job. And that should put the fear of God into you, the Red Sox fan. Because while I love the Sports Pope, I find him unintentionally hilarious. He's one of the greats of all time in this medium. But if he likes something, it's typically the kiss of death. He is a mush's mush. And I heard that clip. We had it in our system this morning. I was trying to find something we could do as a rejoin. I heard that. I was like, oh, I got to play this. Because if he likes it, look out. Because he is, boy, does he get a lot wrong more often than not. So beware. Chaim Bloom, who's now going to be running the Red Sox operation. Nobody knew the name until you started hearing it.
I knew the
last
name.
24 to 48 hours. No, you did?
Yeah, in fact, I wrote columns early on saying they should go after this guy in Neander. This is exactly what I want.
Oh, okay.
Get the secret sauce from Tampa. This is a team with the lowest payroll in baseball that won 90 games last year.
Well, they killed the Chris Archer trade, so credit there.
Yes.
You know, so
And Bloom is allegedly one of the architects of the opener thing, but they won 90 games last year with a nothing payroll. This year, lowest payroll in baseball, they make the playoffs. I think you have to look at it. You know, I've said this for a while. The whole Moneyball thing, you have a great author in Michael Lewis, right? And Billy Bean, I think, is very good at being sort of a marquee frontman, and then you have the movie. But the real Moneyball story is the Rays. The Rays are in a division with two heavyweights, two superpowers, the Yankees and the Red Sox, and they compete. That is far more impressive to me than anything Billy Bean's done in Oakland. And this guy's one of the architects of this thing. So I say bring him in. This is what I wanted, and I wanted them to go outside the organization, have somebody with new thinking, new approaches, new systematics, right? Get the secret sauce from Tampa. So this was a guy that I early on, now I may or may not have also identified that Brandon Todman, Creighton, and Houston, who they just fired, as somebody the Red Sox should look at. But that's besides the point.
Yeah.
Chaim Bloom is somebody that I had on the list as like, this is somebody I think the Red Sox should look at. I am thrilled with this hire.
Yeah, the one thing, so, all right, well, I'm glad you're into it, because I just feel like it's another one of these, like, you know, Ivy League nerds. They're all in the same. It's one of these guys that loves the analytics. But, hey, what they have done in Tampa the last few years, it is impressive. I'm reading from Jen McCaffrey, who writes for The Athletic, in how he and that team have operated within a tight budget. Another enticing piece of Bloom's resume is his success working within a very tight payroll, as you just alluded to, Chris. In 2019, the Rays beat out the Red Sox in their $240 million payroll for a wild card spot with a $60 million payroll. Yes, that was their total payroll as of opening day. Rather than throwing money at problems, Bloom has been part of a front office forced to get the most out of every player. Just one example includes a 2011 trade with the Cubs, where the Rays gave up pitchers Matt Garza and Zach Roscup, along with outfielder Fernando Perez, while acquiring starter Chris Archer, catcher Robinson Chirinos, and outfielders Sam Fuld and Brandon Guyer. 7 years later, the Rays flip Archer to Pittsburgh in exchange for outfielder Austin Meadows and righties Tyler Glasnow and Shane Baz. Red Sox ownership wants a leader who can be creative with roster decisions and budget with Bloom. He seems to fit that mold perfectly. So, yes. Yeah, with moves like yes. that, great, fine.
I love it.
I'll tell you the most interesting part of this whole thing, though. This was being floated to me in my DMs on Twitter as early as, like, Monday. So shout out to the local Yentas and the Jewish community here, because grandsons and sons, I heard all up in my DMs. Well,
his wife is from Lexington.
Yeah, it's like, man, they couldn't get this information out fast enough. Like, all the moms and grandmoms, like, talk like, oh, guess who's going to be moving back? Oh, guess who? And,
yeah, that's
and
awesome.
And so, yeah, like, and I retweeted someone at one point, because there was dudes saying to me, like, more than two or three guys, like, I'm telling you, man, like, I heard it from my mom. Like, it's a lock. And I was like, really? Like, they're like, no, trust me. Like, they've heard this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, shout out there. And then, you know, we have Jared Carabas, cousin Jared of Barstool Sports. He takes it, runs with it, and had it as well. So, Chaim Bloom, great. You know, you trust this guy to move Mookie Betts? Do you still think
yes.
that's still going to be on the table? Like, that's, you know, Betts going to be gone. J.D. Martinez going to be gone.
Let's see what J.D. It's up to J.D. 5 days after the World Series, he has to make a call. Now, it's interesting. What's the market for a player like J.D. Martinez? Do people still believe he can play the outfield? I mean, he had some misadventures in outfielding this year. There's no question about that. However, this is kind of his last chance to cash in at his age. So I think that Scott Boras has to earn his money and figure out what the market is for J.D. Martinez. But I look at this bringing in Chaim Bloom. To me, that makes it more likely you're going to trade Mookie Betts. Because you need someone that knows how to execute that type of deal and who has the temerity to do it. And this guy has both.
And you mentioned Brandon Todman, who, okay, had the resume, but turns out is a giant a-hole.
Yeah.
For earlier this week, well, at least during the ALCS, Stephanie Apstein of Sports Illustrated writes that Todman yelled half a dozen times to three female reporters in the clubhouse after they wrap up the ALCS. Thank God we got Osuna. I'm so effing glad we got Osuna. So that, of course, is their closer, who has a domestic violence stain on him. The thing about this that I find... we're living it like it's dumbest time to be alive. I tweet about it all the time. Like, you see stories on a day-to-day basis. I get it. What this is to me, it's a part of the systematic problem of, you know, people just refusing to apologize because they're so dug in about being right. Like, you know, you brought an a-hole in, but you don't have to be a complete a-hole to it, to female reporters or cover your team. Like, how he handled it was such, it was just distasteful and wrong. But he, you know, what it is like people just don't want to, people are so dug in on their sides and being right and the self-righteousness that comes with that, that they can't get out of their own way. And I think that's what he ultimately did here and why he was shouting at these women, thank God we got Osuna. I'm so glad we got Osuna. Do I think at his heart, was he trying to I don't know, be disrespectful and say like, hey, just domestic violence is no big deal. No, but, you know, that team rightfully took a lot of flack when they brought this guy on, and he was being defiant about it. And you want to be defiant to those that get fake offended, your vegans, your bike riders, people like that, your eco warriors, people like that. Like, I can understand why you're defiant and you don't want to apologize to those people. I ride with you there. But in cases of domestic violence and things like this, like, why were the Astros so defiant and trying to and refusing to give an apology here? Why has it like been trying to pull teeth from this organization, the way that they've handled this thing?
I mean,
like, what idiots?
I just think there's an organizational arrogance there. I know, you know,
they banned the reporter that, you know, Justin Verlander didn't want to deal with.
Yes. Yep. Yep. And I know Evan Jelich from his time there talked a lot about, you know, what it was. And I think he has an article on The Athletic just detailing sort of what their culture is there. And it seems like it's just a culture that exists with an inability to admit fault. You know, they have to be right at all times.
Yeah. So they terminate Brandon Tubman's employment. Deserved, sure. I mean, because he's an a-hole. Like, this is the world we live in. You say something like this, you get everyone gets, you know, upset about it. Like, these are the repercussions. The organization that you work for has the every right to do that. But it's just, I think it just speaks to the bigger problem that, like, people are so dug in on the way that they feel about something, and they refuse to see another side. They refuse to feel like, that you've acknowledged you've actually wronged people. Like, just how they've handled this has been so clumsy and stupid. Like, just admit you were wrong. Like, it's okay. In certain instances, it's okay to say, like, hey, I didn't see it that way. Hey, I'm sorry. It's okay to say I'm sorry. I handled it like a complete a-hole. I was insensitive about this. Domestic violence is a real problem, and throughout sports, systematically, not just baseball. Unfortunately, many people turn a blind eye to it. We did that. We were insensitive to it. We're sorry. Instead, they acted like complete arrogant a-holes, and the guy's out of a job, and I guess rightfully so.
Well, I look at it, too, and I'm like, look, I'm not going to advocate in situations like this. Rarely will I advocate for someone to get fired. However, I understand why they fired him. But I look at it and think, well, okay, but what about the PR department that fabricated a story that wasn't remotely
and they wouldn't
true?
They wouldn't dial it back either.
And they won't retract it. Why do those people get to keep their job?
Right.
That doesn't make sense to me. Unless they're just doing the bidding of ownership, the Jim Crane there and Jeff Luhnow, that they're just doing their bidding. But otherwise, those people should have at least been reprimanded. So, I mean, that doesn't, but I just want to go back to Bloom quickly, because I do have this one little bit of trepidation about bringing him in. It's, have you seen the announcement that he's in as chief baseball officer, but the entire group of four, gang of four that was running things before, they're all going to sort of stay in place, including Brian O'Halloran as his assistant, actually as the general manager when it comes to titles. He'll be the general manager, and above him will be Bloom as chief baseball officer. That gives me a little bit of pause, just because if you want to switch it up and that's what you want to do and that you're saying that's what you need, then shouldn't you let this guy bring in some of his own people instead of just saying it feels a little bit like a classic Red Sox arranged marriage to me, and I don't love that.
All right, you want to weigh in on this? Sox 617, get it right, Jim. 779-0985. Want to join the show? Got a couple of segments to go. We'll get back to the Patriots and what's been a eventful week for them. Josh Gordon out, Mohamed Sanu in, Michael Bennett out, and Tom Brady. A lot of questions about his future. 617-779-0985. We'll get to your calls and get back to the Patriots right after the Sports Hub headlines with Sean Silver.
Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
He DM'd me when I first got traded, and he said welcome and everything like that, how he excited. He said if I wanted 12, I can get it. I was like, nah, I'm good. You got that. I'll change to 14. I just go out there and I'll do my job and let him be great.
Yeah, like that would ever happen. That's latest Patriots acquisition, Mohamed Sanu, meeting with the media for the first time, saying that Tom Brady slid in the DMs. And then when he finally met him in person, was like, hey, you want to have my number 12 that you used to wear? He's like, no, I'll go to 14, like Brady.
Well, Tom was like, hey, you want this number? It's going to be available next year.
Ah, that's right. Yes. What a week for the Patriots. We have Mohamed Sanu being traded for a second-round draft pick. Michael Bennett, he is traded for pocket lint to the Dallas Cowboys. And then everything surrounding Tom Brady. Is he going to retire at the end of the year? Is he going to end up going to another team? Is the least likely option that he returns to the Patriots. You believe that to be true, Chris? Of those three?
Of those three, yes.
That is the least
likely.
Yes,
I mean, I'm putting retirement number one. So, but yeah, of the three, I would say I think that's the least likely at this point.
And then on Mohamed Sanu, I said it earlier, like, it seems like that's some sticker shock there. Second round pick seems high, but it's been a seller's market so far in what's been a pretty active trade deadline. The name guy, Jalen Ramsey, goes from Jacksonville to the L.A. Rams for a couple of first round picks and a fourth. It's crazy. I mean, I really like him, but does he really help? Does he make them a Super Bowl contender this year and going forward? No, not as long as you have that moron quarterback. And Laremy Tunsil, great tackle, goes from the Dolphins to the Houston Texans. So, you know, it's a seller's market.
But what's the common denominator of those three moves and those three teams? They all had desperate needs at that position, so they probably all overpaid.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, and the Patriots are desperate at wide receiver. And you've been, you know, hammering this for a while, and I think rightfully so. It's like they just continue to play a shell game at wide receiver and hope that something sticks, and hopefully Sanu sticks. I do think he will. He doesn't have the straight line speed that'll take the top off the defense or anything like that, but he can make tough catches in traffic. You alluded to Danny Amendola. He can do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And he's someone Brady can trust. So, and a Rutgers guy. So, in theoretically,
he's good in the red zone. He's good in the red zone, which they could use, you know, a bigger target. I mean, he's nowhere near like a Gronk, but when you get down there, he's pretty good down there. Like, his one touchdown this year for the Falcons was against Houston, and it was sort of a classic sort of Patriot scenario. They bring him in motion, he lines up in the slot, runs a really precise crossing route, catches the ball, and Texans rookie corner Lonnie Johnson sheds him, runs down there, gets close to the goal line, dives in, 14-yard touchdown. It's sort of like all the things you can see about Mohamed Sanu in one play that would entice the Patriots.
And I don't really care about a second-round pick with the way the Belichick's used him recently. This was my bigger point. Like, so, oh, it's too much. Is it? I'm about winning now. It's F the future. Get Brady as many weapons as you possibly can. But if you look at it, when is the last time that Bill Belichick has actually hit on a second-round draft pick? You can maybe say 5 years ago with Jimmy Garoppolo or six with Jamie Collins. Since then, it's stiff after stiff after stiff. Jordan Richards stinks. Cyrus Jones, bum. Duke Dawson, bum. Juwan Williams, we don't know, but so far, whatever. I don't care about a second-round pick with the way the Bills used him, so fine. Give it away. Mohamed Sanu, at least you know what you're getting. It's a reliable, solid wide receiver that can make a tough catch in traffic. The Michael Bennett thing, though, I hated how that was handled. Again, felt like that was another one of these moves that Belichick has made as, this is why I graded him as a D with GM when we were talking about this in Felgrim Naz in recent weeks. Like, especially when it comes to your established veteran players, like, he is whiffed more often than not. And on Michael Bennett, he did it again. Like, just in terms of a personality standpoint, I don't know, do you really do your homework here? Or did you just say, oh, no, I'm Belichick, I'm the Patriots, I can turn water into wine with just about any player in the league, and I'll be able to do it here with Michael Bennett? And he didn't. It was a massive failure.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I have a little bit of a harder time blaming Bill, the GM, on this one, because I think they thought they had a role for him, and then the defense was so good and it changed. But I'm just, like, Team Bennett on this, where, like, again, it just, the idea of, like, I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh. It's actually disrespectful. But, you know, like, Brett Bielema lecturing him on what he has to do to be successful in the NFL. It's like, come on. You know, this guy knows what he's doing. We all know what he does. I use this analogy, and it's not a great one, but I used it in my column. It's like, you know, asking Michael Bennett to two-gap is like putting a snowplow in a Ferrari. Like, what are you doing it for? You know it's not going to work. You know it's a waste of the asset, so don't do it. And so when you look at it, they just didn't have an ability to use him the way he'd been used in the past, even taking the two-gapping out of it. Yeah, Phil Perry did an amazing story on NBC Sports
Boston. Oh, that breakdown was great.
It was incredible. I mean, very thorough, very detailed, really well done. And just talking about how they did maybe give him some opportunities to rush sort of from the outside, you know, seven technique, the old wide nine, Jim Washburn, Philly, that type of stuff. But that's the stuff that he does really well. And if you're going to ask him to do other stuff, then it's not really going to work. And I look at that and I sort of say, you either coach it and create a role for him where he can do what he does, or you move on. And now they're moving on. So, you know, hashtag free Michael Bennett. He's free.
Is there any way that we get a game tomorrow?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I was so wrong about last week with the Jets that I feel like anything's possible. But I will say this. If we do, I'll be really disappointed, because I want to see Baker Mayfield struggle like you read about. Like, I want to see, like, 5 of 20 with 4 picks. Like, this kid needs some humble pie. He just does. There's something about him that just rubs me the wrong way. It goes back to Oklahoma. I don't know what it is. I'm sure he's a nice enough guy. It's not actual enmity that I have for him. It's just sports disdain. But the reality is that I would like to see, you know, I'd like to see him get his tomorrow. I really, really would. So I'm hoping that this is another shutout, another blowout, another beatdown. And oh, by the way, I wouldn't mind another Odell Beckham Jr. meltdown on the sideline. Not, I love Odell, but just because I think that makes Baker Mayfield look bad. Because again, I'll go back to another, you know, car trope here. It, that team is loaded, but it's like handing it over to Freddie Kitchens and Baker Mayfield. Again, it's like, you know, handing over a Ferrari to a 16-year-old who just learned how to drive. They don't know what the hell they're doing.
And I feel like the Freddie Kitchens thing, like if your ownership, again, and Felger's brought it up, like the league, there needs to be like almost an intervention here. You have so much talent there, and this is who you hand it off to? Like Maz has referred this to tomorrow's game as the greatest coaching mismatch in NFL and maybe sports history. He might be right because this guy's way, way in over his head. Even a guy like Jim Tomsula, who was like, you know, the equivalent of a janitor, who was the head of the 49ers there a few years back, at least he had like run an offense or an offensive line. This guy's a running back.
This guy
coach.
To me is the least qualified coach I can think of since the Dolphins had a go with the bro coach Dan Campbell. Remember Dan Campbell?
Yeah, yeah.
Didn't he just look like he was gonna, you know, the pregame, like when he was delivering the game plan on like a Tuesday, he was just gonna rip his shirt off, rip his polo shirt, you know, in half.
He looked like PC Principal from South Park.
Yeah,
that's exactly what he looked like.
He did. Remember that guy? I was like, oh, this guy's just like a cheerleader here, you know. It's the same. Freddie Kitchens is. I will say this, though. Dan Campbell, much better physique than Freddie Kitchens.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, for sure. But you have Steve Wilks there, who got blown out after 1 year. He's their D coordinator in Cleveland. So he gets blown out after a year.
Not a bad guy. He's actually a decent coach.
Right. So, I don't know. If your ownership there, if you're if Haslam's paying attention, and they say they get blown out tomorrow, don't you have, what, 9 games left or whatever it is? Like, don't you step in and say, like, okay, we've had enough here. We're handing it over to Steve Wilks and just see what can happen here. Because Kittens is way in over his head.
Here's the thing, though. It's funny. We talk about Cleveland. Everyone talks about the players. I'll tell you a weird stat for me. Jarvis Landry, who, again, player I really like, no touchdown receptions this year. I mean, again, these receivers are going to go Thielen Diggs on Mayfield pretty soon and just stab him in the back because he's not getting it done. I know the offensive line's part of it, but he's out there running around like he thinks he's still at Oklahoma. It's like sometimes you got to just get rid of the ball. But I'm telling you, the sneaky part of Cleveland is that ownership is a train wreck. Like we've talked this year about how weak some of the Patriots' opponents have been in terms of coach and quarterback. What about some of the ownership groups they played? The Johnsons with the Jets, Dan Snyder with the Redskins, now the Haslams. I mean, pretty clueless ownerships. It starts at the top.
I want to go to Jim in Newburyport. We were talking about the Red Sox and their new again, I keep wanting to say president of baseball ops, but that's not the
chief
title. Chief
baseball officer.
You can tell anyone you're under arrest as a chief baseball officer. Say, oh, thanks, John Henry.
I think David Price came up with that name, by the way.
Hey, Jim in Newburyport, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, kind of the same thing. I don't understand why. I don't think Brady would go somewhere else. He might retire, but would he want to come back with Tennessee and have to play an AFC championship game in Foxborough against the Patriots, who maybe pick up Nick Foles or you know, at some other, you know, at Teddy Bridgewater.
Marcus Mariota, you know, book it.
Well, not Mariota, but, you know, there are other guys that, whether it's going to be Breeze or Bridgewater, might be available next year, and the Patriots will have more money to spend without Brady's contract. But to the Betts thing, also, like, who would trade for Mookie Betts? I mean, what would you give up? You'd have to be a team that would think Betts would put you over the top to win a World Series, but it's a one-year rental. And I think his value to the Red Sox is greater than anyone else.
Yeah, but you can't let him walk at the end for the comp pick.
Right.
And this is something that I've said. If I'm the Red Sox and if I'm Bloom, this is what I do. I bill Mookie Betts as the Kawhi Leonard of baseball. And I sell to a Cleveland or to the Dodgers or
Atlanta.
One of these teams, Atlanta, and say, you know, he might only be with you for 1 year, but he can get you a championship. If you're those long-suffering Indians fans, and look, the Indians probably don't have it in their budget. They were a bottom 10 payroll in Major League Baseball last year. But if there's any way they can sort of do it, I think you say to some of these teams that need to get Milwaukee, that need to get over the top, that, yeah, he's going to cost you a lot in the arbitration, but for 1 year, he could be your Kawhi Leonard. He could change the entire culture of your organization, and he could give you a championship. That's how you sell Mookie Betts.
5 questions for Chris Gasper that have nothing to do with sports. Next, here on 98.5 Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray. 98.5 The Sports Hub. This is Gasper and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
I got 5 questions for Chris Gasper of the Globe. I got 5 questions that got nothing to do with sports. I got 5.
wrap up the show as we do each and every week. Five questions for Chris Gasper that have nothing to do with sports. Dive right in here with question number one, Chris. Have you seen The Joker? If so, your thoughts.
I haven't seen it yet. At this point, I'll probably just wait for it to like come out on one of the streaming services or iTunes or something.
You afraid of getting shot in the theater or something?
No,
like
no,
that,
not
or?
At all. I just you know, it's football season. You know how it goes. I just haven't had like a ton of time. Maybe on one of these road trips, like to Philly or Cincinnati, if I am free at night, I could go and see it. I want to see it. I just haven't had a chance.
Yeah, saw it. Really liked it. Didn't get shot. And Joaquin Phoenix, how much weight he dropped for this? Like, that's the part that's the most mesmerizing. Okay. And that's why I would implore you to try to see it if you get an opportunity in the theater. Just because see him on the big screen and how wiry he is, it's like, ugh, it's ghastly. Like, that's part of it. But I don't know. Like, obviously, you know, these high-paid actors get crazy, crazy money. But I would say he probably dropped, like, 50 pounds for this. Do you ever see The Machinist with Batman?
Christian Bale.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And it's like that, like how much weight
it's
he dropped.
Well, really?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Wow. That's insane.
But it's good. It's not like the greatest movie you'll ever see. And I still think that the other Batman there, the Joker, what's his name? The one who unfortunately
Heath Ledger.
Heath Ledger. He's the better Joker, but it's good. It's okay. Really good, but like a bit overhyped.
Okay.
Question number two. A proposed bill at the State House in Massachusetts would penalize the use of the word bitch when used to demean another person. Your thoughts?
I mean, look, you know, I probably have liberal leanings, but I mean, this is like literally the PC police. No, I mean, free speech, man. I'm sorry. Like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, you couldn't have said it better. I am at my core a liberal weenie, especially when it comes to social issues. But you're making it real hard, you people. People like this, language police, oversensitive babies, the worst people in the world. Just busybody losers looking for that endorphin hit of power that they might get from getting nonsense like this passed. Like, oh, pay attention to me. Oh, you're making it really, really difficult. You understand that? Oh, my God, the worst. Who's your favorite comedian of all time?
Ooh, favorite comedian of all time. That's really tough. Obviously, Dave Chappelle's up there pretty high. I'll probably just go with Dave Chappelle.
That's not a bad choice. Did you see his latest special?
I haven't seen the latest one, but I saw the Netflix ones before that. And I mean, he's not in his prime like he was on Chappelle's show, but man, he just makes me laugh. Like, he's hysterical.
The thing I find so interesting about him, it's like the Dr. Dre thing too. They're like jacked.
They
put on like 50 pounds of muscle.
Yes, I agree.
Did you just do it out of boredom? Did you decide, hey, I got to an age where I want to try HGH? You got nothing else to do? Like, those guys are straight up diesel now. Like, that I find fascinating.
It's a good point. I would totally agree with you on that.
Patrice O'Neill for me, the late, great Patrice O'Neill, who I just read the other day that Comedy Central is going to put together a documentary about, and rightfully so. He's the best ever. All right, question number four. If you could eat anything you wanted with absolutely no consequences, speaking of wiry, Chris Gasper, what would you eat?
Probably a lot of barbecue. I do love some barbecues, barbecue ribs. Yeah, that would be great.
You been to the smoke shop? Like, we can plug them.
Yes,
they advertise with us here.
Excellent, fantastic. Awesome. What was the place you sent me to in St. Louis? That was pretty good.
I forget the name of it. Yeah, I mean,
that
you can't
place
go
was
wrong
great.
With...
I took pictures of it in case I'm ever back there. I'm like, okay, I don't know the name of this place.
Maybe Smokey-O's. Oh man, barbecue is great. But that's
Dreamland Barbecue. I need to make it there. I've never made it there. I've been to Franklin.
Oh, down in Alabama.
Franklin. Yeah. Like, if I could go to Franklin Barbecue in Austin, Texas, every day, I would be a happy person.
So the consequence, I'm with you on this. It's barbecue for me because the consequences aren't so much like the getting fat, because at this point I really don't care. It's the agita. Like, barbecue lately in the recent years, like, oh, I just feel like smoke.
And the colon cancer.
Oh, yeah, that too. Apparently there is a thing called No Spend November, Chris, which, I mean, I'm sure that shakes you to your core. It's meant to help everyone save money for holiday gift spending. Do you watch your spending ahead of the holidays?
Wait, back that up. No spend, so don't spend money on yourself so you can spend money on other people.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what it is. I am not on board with that.
Hell with that.
I'm frugal on certain things.
Yeah. Right. The man will drive around for 40 minutes and be late for dinner to try to find parking.
That's right.
But those...
I pay for these streets. But, why should I pay to park in a garage?
But those $800 shoes... Daddy needs
a
new pair.
I don't own any pair of shoes that is $800. I do not.
Probably pretty close.
I don't.
That will do it for Gasper Murray, this edition here, this Saturday. I want to thank Sean Silver, who joined us on the headlines and chiming in. Of course, Brian Robb and Chris Forsberg, who joined us during the Sports Hub Celtics show. We have Christian Arcand coming up next. I don't know how long, Arcand. How long are you on to? You on until 4 hours? Did you get three?
Five.
He's on until 5 o'clock.
I'm on until 5 o'clock. I wanted to ask you how bad the traffic was coming in just so I can already get mad before I get to my car.
There was a one-car accident.
Oh, go ahead.
Here we go. A one-car accident on 93 South that everyone stopped and looked at.
Oh, good.
And Kristen Sermon and I were and Joe Murray, too, were just sitting in it.
it was infuriating. You might not get it going back up, but if you're going on 93 South right now, just sorry. You have to deal with this.
That stinks, but can I just say really quickly, one of the things I do appreciate about Boston is, like, a lot of cities become a complete ghost town on the weekends. At least here, like, people still care and, like, do stuff in the city.
Yeah, because there's so much to do.
Like, crash their car and clog up traffic.
Vibrant city with so many options. Yeah, no, there's such a reason to stick around. All right, that'll do it for me. And Chris, Arcan coming up next. Enjoy your weekend. Talk to you Monday with Felger and Mass. Bye.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.